Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 536. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by my beautiful, talented, and effervescent co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello.
Hello. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. This puppy streams live at koop.org. You better not go away. You better stay right there. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
When you see your own breath in the
It is Wednesday, October 2nd, 2019. On the show today, we have Thinkery in Verse and Canopy Theaters presenting Dionysus in America, and then Mistress of Musicality and their event, show, I don't know what it is, we'll find out. It's called Burlesque the Vote. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, New Orleans, Chicago, London, and Brechtonshire. We'll be right back. I don't know what Brechtonshire really is.
I was about to say, was that a made-up land?
I believe it was a made-up name from because I grew up in England in the Midlands, and we had a little town called Brechtonshire where I was a milkmaid and had to run around to all the houses with little cartons of milk.
Were there 11 maids a-milking?
There were 11 maids a-milking, but it was a Jewish neighborhood, so nobody really knew what that meant. So there it was. Checking in with you, Miss Nicole Shiro. How are you?
Hello, I am here.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, we can hope for nothing.
It is hot out.
It is. It's hot out. But I don't know if you noticed that the song that we played, it was all about autumn, because it's not supposed to be hot out.
I know it's not.
That was from Wind in the Willows.
I love that. I know you do. Stories. I know.
I know you do. Never seen it.
Really?
Excuse me for living, but I never read it.
You never read it?
I never did anything.
Come on now. Like,
I know.
You love Dickens and you haven't read Wind in the Willows.
I do love Dickens.
Like, really?
I do believe in ghosts. I do believe in ghosts. let's introduce the folks that are here joining us.
I'm going to get you that for
Shall we?
Hanukkah.
Okay, Hanukkah. Yeah. You always get me really lovely gifts for Hanukkah, and I don't get you
excited.
Anything for Christmas because I'm a,
you know why?
I'm a Scrooge.
You bring me joy.
You
are my gift.
You bring me joy to the world. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us. Risky Dixie, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Welcome. You've not been on the show before, have you?
I have never been on the show.
Oh, yeah. And returning champion, Coco Electric. Hi, Coco.
Hi, how are you?
And then we have Heather Ross.
Hey, how are you?
And Johnny Meyer.
Hello.
Who Nicole thought was
the
who?
Names are really close on the bottom, so I saw Johnny real quick, and I was like, Johnny Weir? Why is Johnny Weir here? And she goes, who's Johnny Weir?
So by a ray of hand, Marisa,
and I went,
do people know who Johnny Weir is?
I've heard the name before.
Yeah, see, it's not just me.
You guys, he's an Olympic ice. He used to be an Olympic ice skater. He's won some medals for us, and now he commentates all the ice skating with Tara Lipinski. Do you know Tara Lipinski, the ice skater?
I do not. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Olympics! Let me just let everyone know the next Olympics is next July, opening ceremony, okay. July 24th, Tokyo.
So we will be covering the Broadway Olympics when they happen, but I'm not sure that they're on the books yet. Let's talk about a Broadway.
I'll be at the Olympics and report for you.
I know you will.
Tokyo.
I know you will. Benjo wa dokono no desu ka?
Ah, watashi wa nemu desu.
So we did have an opening on Broadway this week.
We did.
Yep. And it's a show that you worked on here in Austin.
I did get to work on this show,
and I have to say that we thought, you know, it had gone through a lot more productions, and I was hoping it had improved,
so,
but evidently it had not improved.
So he paired it, so once it was at Zach and then went to
Let's
Houston.
Let's tell people who, what it
the
is.
The Great Society, the sequel to All the Way by Robert Schenken.
Right, which All the Way won a Tony for both the best play and best lead actor for Bryan Cranston.
And so this play takes on when he, you know, we end in All the Way with him, LBJ, going into office, and this play kind of takes on from there and goes all the way through all the
And
crazy
let me tell
things
you
that happened. In the
when we say all the way, all the way, it's 3 hours of long,
so
boring
he's cut
tedium.
It. No, he's here's what's fun, interesting is that he cut, so it went down
right,
even
and it's
shorter.
Still over 3 hours.
And it's still over. I was like, now wait a minute, because you redid it with Houston and Dallas Theater, Alley and Dallas Theater Center did a co-pro where he pared it down.
He did. There were probably 20 productions between Austin and New York. Anyway, so Jesse Green calls it the overstuffed, underbaked play by Robert Schenken.
I think
so. I know.
Part of the problem is
negative reviews are so much fun to read.
And part of the problem is it's a heavy play with a lot of bad politics and
But it's not
hard stuff in our life. It's that people are having a hard time watching
not,
that too.
It's, no, it's not the content. It's the way it's put together. It's
oh no,
it's
they just, wrote about this was very hard to watch in this current time.
And I
said that years ago too.
This particular review and most of the others were about the production itself and how the show is not. It's not weaved. It's basically the biggest thing that Jesse Green had a problem with of the New York Times was that you don't different from All the Way. This one was more factual. There was no emotion behind it. It was all the facts of the things that happened, but didn't really get into the emotion. And that's what makes theater interesting. And so they talked about the show itself and the things that are going on with Martin Luther King and Stokely Carmichael and Hubert Humphrey and all these characters and people that were in it. He says, the chess game here is three-dimensional. Alas, Johnson isn't. So, and he said, and instead of psychology, we were shown stratagem. So that was his big problem with the show, that it lacked a lot of emotion, which it could have had, just didn't.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's tough in that era because it's kind of hard not to feel miscentered when you focus on LBJ. Because you've got all these big events going on.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on.
And there was a lot.
And especially in the time that Nicole is talking about, you had the Vietnam War was ramping up and we were losing lives, a lot of lives. We had
the Civil Rights.
The Civil Rights Act had was passed at the end of the last one, but it was not enacted to the point that the Voting Rights Act didn't happen. Yeah. There was a lot of problems with Martin Luther King and Stokely Carmichael. There was a lot of stuff going on, but they didn't. But I understand. And I agree because I saw it here. It's just a bunch of facts laid out with people saying them.
I feel like LBJ. I mean, but I don't know what he ended up taking out. But there was a moment where he had. I guess it was right before Nixon ended up coming into the office. But I mean, I love All the Way, and I didn't find this one as great as that. But I also did.
I didn't like
years
this one
ago.
At all.
Find it like, whoa, this is really timely and disturbing. So I can imagine just a few years later, even more so.
Jesse Green says it's bad enough that Johnson is so two-dimensional. The supporting characters have it worse. Their traits are parceled out as a one-per-customer basis. Wow. Humphrey's a patsy, King is a warrior, Carmichael's a hothead, and Wallace is a weasel. And that's...
Yeah, they were like that. I could say that.
Yeah. So, good.
I mean, from what... Not personally, but from the last time I saw it.
Jesse Green really didn't like it. The other critics were a little less harsh, but none of them really liked it. Charles Isherwood said, Brian Cox is... And who plays...
I was like, there was a shout-out on some of the acting.
Yeah. Brian Cox is an estimable actor and gives a performance of pugnacious ferocity that is very much the equal of Cranston's. The cast, even when given minimal stage time to shape their characters, is largely terrific. Deadline's Greg Evans said the fluidity with which director Bill Rausch presented this march of time is never short of impressive, often near miraculous, jarring when necessary. And finally, Sarah Holdren of Vulture said there's no question that Cox is a powerhouse of an actor, but Schenken's play gives him shackles rather than wings.
Mm.
So, yeah, I know. Now, Heather, when you speak, you have to speak into the microphone or else people cannot hear you.
I said, ooh, ouch.
And the other problem with being... there you go. The issue with being on our show is we don't have an engineer, so any reprimanding that goes on happens over the air.
It comes
air, so.
Out, yes. Yeah. How the sausage is made. We like the show.
So, God, I had this great idea. And I may wait and see if I'm going to do it. So I'm going to hold off on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I may still do it. You never know.
I don't know what it is, so I can't even weigh in.
No, you can't weigh
in. I'm going to say go with your gut.
I'm going to.
Okay.
I may just do that. So
that's my expertise opinion
today. There was
today.
Another... There was another opening, although this one happened a little west of here in San Diego.
San Diego.
Of Almost Famous. Is anybody a fan of the movie Almost Famous?
Yeah.
Okay, let me give you a hint. Nodding does not work on the radio.
Yes,
there you go. They're all nodding.
I saw that. How so about this, you? Have you seen this movie, Lisa Shepp?
I did see the movie.
You did?
Yeah, I didn't love it, didn't hate it. And actually, interestingly enough, the character is 15 years old in 1973 when it takes place. And guess what? I was 15 years old in 1973.
You weren't riding on rock buses hanging out?
I was not. I was a Jewish kid from suburbia. We didn't do that kind of stuff. We hung out with our own people. That's not true. Anyway, this show directed by Jeremy Herron is, and according to Charles McNulty.
Charles McNulty.
McNulty. Mm-hmm. Of the theater critic for the LA Times. Yep. He calls it an unqualified winner.
Mm-hmm. He wrote on, I read that. He was like, look, I do not like movies being turned into musicals. They don't work. They don't have charm. He's like, this one does.
Yeah.
And then some, which I could see, actually.
So the original music is by Tom Kitt. He did the music and the orchestrations. The screenplay and the lyrics were done by Cameron Crowe, who is the person that did the original movie. It's autobiographical.
I was like, it's his life. It's mm-hmm. his story. So, I mean.
Yep. But the Charles McNulty goes on to say, Kitt's arrangements and orchestrations artfully weave these vintage treasures into an entrancing tapestry of sound. And what he's talking about there is not the original music that Kitt wrote, but the odd times that there are music of that era that's in there. Evidently, the arrangement and the orchestrations that weave them into the story are really done very, very well.
Unlike they weaved Huey Lewis into American Psycho. Is that what you're getting at?
went right over my head. All right. I'm going to read the final paragraph to this review because that's what I said to do in my notes. Almost Famous isn't just a glimpse into the beginnings of a fledgling music writer who becomes a major filmmaker. It's the story of an artist's battle between compromise and complexity. But it's the spirit of the music, a vibe that goes from laid back to frenetic in a blink that captivates. The chaotic communal spirit of the 70s rock is distilled in a musical that seems destined to conquer Broadway. And some of the podcasts I listen to are guessing that they're going to announce a Broadway run very soon.
I'm going to say yes. I mean, I've heard that rumor. It just says a lot about the show because it's one of those actual movies, whether you like the movies or not, it's one of the greatest soundtracks to the movie. Like I can sit here and think of all the Elton John numbers. Like I can sit here and go through the whole album in my head. So when you associate these iconic songs that we all know in pop culture and this movie, and then someone's written all this original work and has made someone forget about that, and it's
and
just
Tom
as good.
Kitt, no less.
Wow. That says something about the piece. That got me excited because that's where I thought it could go all wrong.
Sure.
But apparently it did not. It's very, very exciting.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. So the other review I wanted to talk about, and what I was going to do is have us all read this. I had actually printed out, sitting on my printer at home, are the individual parts I was going to give everybody to read because I had so much fun with this. This is written by Jesse Green. It's a review of a show that didn't really happen. I'm going to read you guys the first couple of paragraphs so you get an idea of what I'm talking about. So here's his review by this show called Eyes Only. You'd expect a better script from two showbiz professionals. After all, Donald J. Trump, before he was president of the United States, was a television personality and a one-time Broadway producer. The show was a flop. And Vladimir Zelensky, before he was president of Ukraine, was an actor and a comedian. So why, between them, couldn't they come up with something better than a ham-handed parody of a macho arm-twisting and submissive toadying in the manner of a third-rate David Mamet or Harold Pinter? So he goes on basically to treat the phone call that we're all talking about these days as a play. And it's a lovely review, and it's kind of funny. He talks about American Buffalo and Glengarry Glen Ross and Always Be Closing and things like this. So that will you can find that at the New York Times, or it'll also be a link on our website, offstageonair.com. But it seems like a lot of fun.
I was like, how much fun did he have writing that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's like one of those cracking yourself up in your cubicle.
Yep. So so that sounds fun. It's the headline is, it's no Glengarry, a Times Theater Critic Reviews Eyes Only. So
it had to be kind of like a tragic comedy when they, when all those bureaucratic aides are in there and they're watching this train wreck happen in slow motion.
Oh my God. Well, but they're used to the, they have to be used to watching those train wrecks happen. It's like, oh, it's another train wreck.
Yeah. Well, that,
and that's nobody scary. Dies. Yeah. Everybody actually lives after his train wrecks for some reason. So I don't know. I should say that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not those of this radio station's, the staff, or the board of directors. They are strictly ours, and we're allowed to have them. So there.
Just a little reminder.
Yep, just a little reminder. Is anybody a Transparent fan, the TV show?
Yes.
So you know that they, so since when Jeffrey Tambor is no longer able to be on it, they created this last season without him. And it's a finale, and it's a musical, and it is out already. It's a one-episode season with this musical. Has anybody seen it?
I only saw a few minutes. I watched Judith Light in her outfit doing her...
It is spectacularly terrible.
Is it really?
Oh, my God.
Really?
It is so bad. I watched half of it and had to turn it off.
Really?
I'm sorry. It is...
Because I enjoyed that, and I was like, well, but I could see where it was going to go. I didn't know.
I did not like the music.
No.
And I realized that the cast are not dancers, but they could have surrounded the cast with people that could actually move. It was...
Was it just the cast dancing? And
there were some others, but they danced as poorly as the cast for the most part.
Oh, that's awful.
And the singing was also substandard, but the music there was nothing interesting about it. And the story was contrived, to say the least.
Was it?
Yes, it's all, Mara, who's the Jeffrey Tambor character, she dies suddenly. But one of the good things about it is Alexandra Billings, who played Mara's friend, who was someone I knew in Chicago, is a transgender actress, and she is billed as a producer. She loomed large in this this piece, and she just got another part on another show, a musical.
I was like, she's going to do something else, and like a week ago she got cast.
Yep.
Could you tell what was their... You can kind of guess at the objective, but did they make it clear in it? Were they trying to live through the character's final moments?
Quite frankly, from a plot standpoint, I only watched half, but I had no idea. I mean, it seems to center around in the will, she left everything to the Alexandra Billings character and not to their family. Their family is, again, my age and my era. Mm-hmm. Upper middle class Jewish family. And that's a shame because, if anybody saw the last season, their third season, I thought their third season was wonderful.
Yeah. And then to go.
And then it happened. Then he had to be himself, which is terrible. Mm. So, I know that didn't really answer your question, but I don't have an answer.
So they weren't like dividing up the property and with music or something?
No. No, I actually don't know what the... I really don't get many of the choices. And it may be that I'm just dense and not able to get it.
Well, it seemed like some of the numbers were just that weird musical numbers that just came out of nowhere.
Mm. But they didn't. They were. It was a la musical style. It did carry the plot forward. So it was indeed done as a musical. And I don't know. They were trying to be Chicago-esque at
That's
parts.
What...
But they didn't. They missed the mark. I'm sorry. That's my review.
I did say, because the one number I said, well, Judith Light looks like she's Sheila from A Chorus Line trying to be in a number from Chicago.
So you saw the number in the girls' camp. Were the little girls as the backup singers?
No, there was like feathers, and she's in the...
I may not have stuck around long enough.
She's in a leotard. Like, she looks like Sheila in the total nude leotard and stockings from A Chorus Line. And then girls were all doing like Chicago feathers.
Yeah, and
it was all like stage lights, and there were actual dancers, but after like two pirouettes, that was about it.
Mm-hmm. So I challenge you all to watch it for yourselves. And
now you
that.
Have me more curious.
Yeah. So there's also an article in the New York Times, the failing New York Times. that's another one of these things with Jesse and Ben doing
They like to do these things. I know.
But this was their answering readers' questions. And so I'll just pick a couple of them. I'm not a reader.
Well, they listen to us all the time. Why aren't they answering our questions?
One person said, pick two shows that will be Tony nominated this spring. And Ben Brantley said one that has yet to come to the, it's going to open in November at the Ethel Barrymore, is The Inheritance. Mm-hmm. He thinks it's going to receive a nod for best play. It's a 6-hour epic.
Yeah.
Musicals, Moulin Rouge, which he's seen twice. He thinks that Karen Leva will get best actress nod. Jesse Green starts with Caroline or Change, which I'm very excited about.
Yes, me too.
And that's the Jeanine Tesori, Tony Kushner.
I saw that musical. Original cast.
Okay. And he also talks about the Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf that's going to be opening soon. And so here, for extra credit, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is oft revived on Broadway.
Yes.
How many shows, including revivals, not including this upcoming, have there been on Broadway of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
I'm going to say 8 or 9.
12. Okay.
15?
5 is the number that I was going to say.
Yeah, 5. Everybody loses because they've gone over, but it was 4.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, this will make the 5th, but that's a lot for Broadway revivals.
I don't think it's like Death of a Salesman. Haven't there been more of that one?
Yeah. We talk about that somewhere.
Yeah, it's always happening.
So then they said, what are some of the must-sees in London? Which I must admit, I'm not.
In London?
In London, Mary
what
old
do
London.
They want to see? Not their Shakespeare Rose Theater. That closed down.
Glasskill Bluebeard Imp by Carol Churchill.
Interesting.
Yeah, love me some Carol Churchill.
Curiouser.
Heather, you like? You got that look. Like, what is
it? I like the title. It's very. Like,
well, it's actually
it
four different
go,
shows.
It's four different.
It's four
shows.
Little small shows.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with Carol Churchill?
I don't think so.
Oh, she's an amazing playwright.
She's great at that form too.
Like, yes.
Short. Well, that's
kind of her thing.
Yeah.
Well, what it says is because she's does very. I don't want to say avant-garde, but they're interesting. He said, and it's made up of four short plays about, well, literal description is kind of moot when it comes to Miss Churchill.
Yes.
But it opened to great reviews and it's directed by James McDonald, who's a great director. The other thing in London is Death of a Salesman.
Yes.
There you go.
I'm telling you, it's like that and your glass menagerie, or how do you say it in Espanol?
Zuilogio de Cristal.
Thank you.
So another question is, will there be enough musicals with original music for best score? So the answer is yes, because we have The Lightning Thief, 6, Diana, and Flying Over Sunset so far. But then when you get into best musical, you add Moulin Rouge.
I was about to say, did you have Diana in there? But you did.
Yeah. You add Moulin Rouge, Tina, Jagged Little Pill, and Girl from the North Country.
Yeah, I was about to say, you didn't mention Tina, but you just threw her in there.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Because it doesn't have an original score.
Tina, no.
No, it doesn't.
No, I mean, Tina wrote it.
I'm just saying.
It's Tina's
stuff. I was obsessed with Moulin Rouge growing up.
Yes.
I watched it back to back. The only reason I got my mom to watch it is because I told her Nicole Kidman died.
Oh, no!
Oh, my gosh.
Well, don't get this one started about
Moulin
Rouge.
Still wouldn't get me to watch it. It's like painful. Who cast that woman in that?
I thought she did.
Oh, my.
I thought she did a great job. Okay, so Nicole.
Thank you.
Yes.
I know where we're going.
Well, there you go.
Thank you.
So this is actually an interesting one. I don't quite know how I feel about it.
It has me, yes.
An actress was cast as Cece in The Color Purple.
Seeley
and Cece. Her friends call her Cece. Her name is Seye Omumba. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. She was cast in the show on the West End. I don't know. It may not have been the West End,
but it was
in London. And then she was, 2 days later, she was taken out because Aaron Lee Lambert, who is in the West End production of Hamilton, found a tweet of hers
It was a Facebook post from 5 years before. That was a group conversation.
About homosexuality. She wrote, it is, quote, "It is clearly evident in 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11 that the Bible says on this matter, I do not believe you can be born gay, and I do not believe homosexuality is right." And he asked in his tweet, "Do you still stand by this post? Or are you happy to remain a hypocrite? Seeing as you've been announced to be playing an LGBTQ character, I think you owe your LGBTQ peers an explanation immediately."
That wasn't the whole post, though. And she did write in there, in that original post, mm-hmm. when she did the quote, "This is just my opinion from my beliefs, and that is not my place to judge." She put that in there, right. too. But so he didn't put the whole... I'm not right, defending but that, but I'm just saying it's little like...
Their point is you're playing, so she's often believed to be an LGBTQ character.
Correct.
And they just don't think. So anyway, the theater company fired her, and then she sued them.
It took her 6 months to sue. She hasn't been able to find any work, and she's blacklisted everywhere.
Yeah, she's blacklisted everywhere. So I don't know how I feel about it. You know, in my opinion, those kind of thoughts are best left unwritten. Even if you believe them, I think it's best, especially if you're worried about a career, to keep them to yourself rather than put them out on social media. But there is the First Amendment, and she has every right to, well, not in London, but she does have every right to say those thoughts.
They don't have the First Amendment, but they do have their free speech. They do have free speech. It's just a little different than ours, but they do have free speech like we do. So I do not agree with her personal beliefs in any way, shape, or form. However, if it was on a forum of a conversation and someone, they were giving opinions, whether it's right or wrong, I think we have to stop judging people for stuff for 5 years ago and have a conversation with them about it and say, why did you say this? Is this what, like, and I think it's wrong for another actor just to go F you and just post it like that. That ruined this girl's career. She could think differently now. Maybe she has had experiences in 5 years. I don't know. I think we're just so to the point of, what's right, what's wrong, what's
how
right, what's wrong.
How do other people feel?
I'm torn with both sides.
Let's let other people talk.
Okay, so being queer myself, like, I feel like, well, one, definitely you shouldn't be playing, like, a queer character. Like, I feel like I agree that you shouldn't be putting these out there in the public or even having those public conversations. Take it to a private conversation if you feel like you have to say something like that. But especially in the theater community, which is so full of, like, it's about inclusivity, at least, like, in my experience, that's what I love theater for. And that's where we share stories about, like, that you don't, like, all the hardships and all the
stuff.
But
do you think she should have lost her job and career over it?
No.
I think that she should, like, there should have been some kind of repercussion, but I feel like at times that can be super extreme. Because she's not going out there saying she hates us.
Right.
Or that she, you know, wants us to go to hell or anything. She's just saying that's just what her, like, her religious or beliefs have gotten, like, that's where she's at with them right now. And maybe, like, I think the forum should be opened up for her to have a conversation with people from the community. And now the company is, like, that's up to them whether they wanted to fire her or not. And it could have been a huge PR thing, and I get that. But... you know, like, being completely blacklisted for the rest of her life, that's
what bothers me, because it is persecution of religion, even though it's not the religion I believe.
I disagree with that, but that's neither here nor there. It's not persecution of religion.
Yeah.
But she also, I think she's different now. I don't
think that they thought, even if they don't think it anymore, now it's just saying, like, even if you believe this and you're saying, I'm not going to judge anybody, you can't talk. And that's silencing somebody, and that across the board is, I don't feel like that's okay.
But. Yeah, well, it's not necessarily silencing. It's
by
just punishing people for the things that they say.
I would think she is just, when you look at where she was in her career and where she is now, because I went back, I'm like, well, how old is she? What has she done?
She's young.
Yeah. I would like to know, because she hasn't approached it at all, and I get it, probably because she's in litigation. Like, what are her feelings on everything now? Yeah. What has her experiences been since she originally wrote this post 5 years ago?
No one taught us digital etiquette growing up. Like, 5 years ago, you can only imagine how young she could have been getting into Facebook or wherever it was. No one taught us digital etiquette to say, you better watch what you say on here because it'll come back to bite you later on in life.
Yeah, in a sense, 5 years ago is kind of a long time on the internet. You know, a lot of us were like, oh, nobody's going to see this conversation I'm having with my friends. Oops. You know,
it's so strange that those of us that did not grow up with that internet, it's like as soon as it started happening, it was like, I remember I had friends on LiveJournal, you know, 15 years ago, and they were like spouting their life on this thing. And my feeling was, oh my God, are you crazy?
That was my feeling because I never grew up with it either. And then when I saw everybody doing that, I'm like, are you nuts?
Okay. Unfortunately, I have to stop this conversation. It's such a wonderful conversation, but we're running late. Continue the conversation amongst yourselves because I think it's an important one. Let's go out. We're going to hear a little bit of that lovely music from the Transparent musical.
Oh, you got some.
You built it up so well.
It's already on iTunes.
Who do you have?
It's called Sepulveda Boulevard. It's a group number.
Okay. Carpools and playdates
fade to strip mall parking. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello.
And now we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk about the Thinkery in Verse and Canopy Theater's production of Dionysus in America. And I'm so proud of myself.
Oh my gosh, you did it!
That's twice in a row.
I know.
And while I'm talking this, I am actually dialing in the playwright.
You're multitasking.
So I'm multitasking. But in the meantime, let's hear
dialing for dollars.
Hear from the show. We have the director, Johnny Meyer. Are you the director?
I am.
Okay, good.
One of the directors.
One of the directors.
Karen Alvarado, my artistic partner, is the other.
Uh-huh. And we have Heather Ross. And what is your position with this, Heather?
I'm stage managing and costume coordinating, and I'll be running the light and soundboard.
Oh, lovely.
Kind of you more than have that. A few hats.
Heather's. Yeah. We've had a crazy production schedule, and Heather's actually kind of held the show together, honestly. Like, being able to pull everybody to the room, get them through some early exercises. It's been outstanding, actually.
Cool. So tell us about the show. Somebody.
Okay. So Dionysus in America is...
And congratulations on the pronunciation. You did it right.
I'm so pleased. I've been working on it all day myself also. This developed out of... I'm a military veteran. Ginny Pakanowski is a military veteran, combat veteran. And in New York... just about a year and a half ago, we were working with a group called Aquila Theater. They got some funding from the New York State. And the idea was to put military veterans in a place where they could work on theater, write plays. And I've been doing that for a few years now, but this was Ginny's first opportunity to do this.
That's so awesome.
It was really cool. And the way that I knew Ginny was a great facilitator already. And I just thought that she needed, this was a great opportunity for her to like get her to go through the whole process, or at least the writing process. So she got a bunch of other vets in the room. They got a classic scholar to work with her. And she worked off of Paul Woodruff. He's a professor here at UT Austin. Mm-hmm. And they took his translation. And then she, in turn, translated it into her own experience. And then kind of...
Translated the Bacchae.
The Bacchae into her own experience. So okay. She kind of...
That's interesting.
Yeah, she uses the word translation instead of adaptation, which I think told me a lot about how she was thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the process of that, to make it emotionally real to her, it enters this crazy dystopia of America and of the wars in the Middle East. Because which makes a lot of sense, really. Because Ginny was a rather kind of low ranking combat medic over there.
Let me stop you right there. We actually have Ginny on the phone.
Yay,
are you there,
Ginny?
Yes.
Hello.
Yay,
Ginny,
how are you?
The party.
Our little phone system here in the studio is broken. So I've got you on my iPhone. So really, I'm the only one that can talk to you, but everybody can hear you.
Okay, that's good.
You
can hear me, right?
Yes, we all hear you.
They all hear you. We were just talking about your process of writing this piece.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know if Johnny shared with you guys that I started just writing the piece through Akula Theater in New York City when they gave us a Warrior Chorus project, which was getting veterans and family members together working on a classic piece and then doing something original with it.
Yep. And so this is an incredible piece. How many actors are involved in this?
Heather knows the exact number.
Go ahead, Heather's right here.
They're all smiling, and so
it has changed. So I believe we've got four Bauckeye, four sisters.
It's kind of perfect. I kind of want to say
so 10 people.
Yeah, it's kind of perfect. Like Ginny Pakanowski is, I'm trying not to curse.
Please don't.
Is amazing and a very strong woman writer, and it's almost not. And a lot. One of the things she tackles is patriarchy and gender dynamics and the way men have trouble letting go of control. And so it's almost not an accident that a couple of men dropped out of the project.
Interesting.
Yeah. It made perfect sense to me. I mean, you couldn't do anything but laugh.
So the piece itself, as I read the description on the Vortex website, it talks about a lot of how certain people in our country are doing fear-mongering and this sort of battles that fear-mongering.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Well, it does do a bit of battling that fear-mongering. It's got, you know, right now there is, it's explicitly changed actually, right? So that right now we're in a very, I think, racist period in American politics.
You think?
It's where they're racializing and the problems that are in our society and elsewhere, and they're blaming other groups without engaging in them. So there were a lot of terrible problems with the Bush administration that both Ginny and I served under.
Uh-huh.
And yet, going into this administration, they don't even care what the dynamics are
Correct.
Over there. The whole point is just to throw stuff at people that are different.
Thank you. Congratulations.
And so now the play, the characters in it kind of, they a bit like fall into that perspective. Like that nobody makes any sense except for themselves. They think they're the only one who's rational. They don't have any real understanding of what's going on out there. It's almost like a serious mist.
Right.
In fact, we've got a map right now which excludes, like it's drawn with like Austin, Texas in the bullseye, like center.
Yeah.
And then it's supposed to be a world map, but it actually at the edges, it excludes the Middle East. So when you try to actually look at it, you can't see it. And that's kind of what a lot of these characters like shout out through.
Yeah. So is there a desire to take this outside of Austin?
Yeah, I would like to do that. I would.
Okay, well, you heard it here first.
Yeah.
I think it would do very well, like several places. Like this, there's a lot here, and it's a very powerful play. The writing is just really on point and really gets you feeling things. And there's... I can't say specific lines that, you know, but I also think that Johnny and Karen's approach to it is really unique and experimental. Mm-hmm. And I think it really heightens, like, it really brings it to light and kind of reveals all these possibilities.
So what age groups should come and see this piece?
Well, I think that, I actually think that given the way that the commander-in-chief has expanded the vocabulary that's acceptable in public discourse. I think that we should, the best way to confront this for kids is to see the cost of it.
Okay.
And so I do think that, like, this is a great first introduction to the Bauckeye. If you've never seen it before, if you've never seen it hit the emotional peaks and the frustrations, I think, Bring your kiddos.
Well, all right, wonderful. We are completely out of time. Where can folks get more? Well, first of all, you're playing at the Vortex. What dates?
We're playing from the 11th. We're premiering on a Friday at 8 p.m. Every show, we have no matinees. So it's the first weekend's Friday, Saturday, Sunday at 8. And then we start back up the next week on Wednesday through Sunday, 8 p.m. every night at the Vortex.
Great. And where can folks... Go ahead.
Yeah, if you write me a nice email, I can get I can get listeners a preview ticket. I'd be interested in.
Okay, would you be? Are you okay to share your email on the air? Go ahead and give it out.
Thinkery.and.verse@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
And you can go to the Vortex website to find out more information.
Right, and that's vortexrep.org.
Yes.
Great. Awesome.
Thank you.
So thank you. I'm going to say goodbye to Jenny because I need a little. Audio cable that's connected to the phone. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You, Jenny.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Jenny.
Okay, that was Heather Ross, Jenny Pakanowski, and Johnny Meyer of Thinkery and Verse and Canopy Theater's production of Dionysus in America, playing October 11th through 20th at the Vortex. For more information, vortexrep.org. We'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air. And you know what we didn't do, Nicole Shiro?
What didn't we do, Lisa Chef?
We didn't get Johnny Meyer to choose a number between 2 and 52.
Oh, no. You have a job. You're not off the hook.
Could you, could you choose a number between 2 and 52?
37.
37 is great. Let's see what that is. That was a mistake. That was an absolute. Let's try that again.
Hi, this is Austin gay playwright Alan Baker, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps on KOOP Hornsby, Austin 91.7 FM.
Beautiful. Thank you, Alan. All right. We're plumb out of time for our center section, but we're going to do a little bit of Today in Theater History. But I do want to just tell folks about a couple of things. At UT is
It's 12
Ophelias, mm-hmm. A play with broken songs. So check that out. It's opens October 3rd and plays through the 13th. You may go to the UT's website to find that out. And finally, I just want to talk about Hang. Hopefully, we're going to get them on the show here next week. They're playing at Ground Floor Theater. It stars one Robert Ferris, one
like
Barbara
Mr.
Chisholm,
Robert
and one Nadine Mazon. So it's an incredible cast. Heather just did arm-raising Rocky kind of thing. Oh, say that again. Your microphone wasn't on.
She was one of my teachers at Texas State.
Yep. So, she currently is on the faculty. And this is done by Chuck Nye and his wife, Michelle Nye, who are also on the faculty at Texas State.
I also know them, too.
Yeah. Well, they're at my theater. Or they're at the Ground Floor Theater, whoever runs that. I don't know who it is. Okay, we're going to do a very quick Today in Theater History.
Today
with no,
in Theater History.
With none of that.
Today.
Okay, we're going to just do it anyway. Okay, so today's the birthday of... Groucho Marx.
Ah.
Extra credit if anybody can tell me his real name.
Oh, no,
I just looked him up yesterday.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Harpo is Adolf. Chico is Leonard. I forgot who Gamma was, but Groucho was Julius.
Julius.
Okay, so I'm going to say some more. Also the birthday of Bud Abbott of Abbott and Costello.
Really?
Yep. And let's see. I'm like... So this is there was a revival of Showboat in 1994,
mm-hmm.
At the Gershwin, starring Elaine Stritch, Rebecca Luker, and mm-hmm. Mark Jacoby.
Like,
yeah.
Wish they could have gotten a better cast.
Yeah. Too bad. And your favorite, Hunter Foster and Carrie Butler did a revival of...
Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors. And I want to talk about Little Shop of Horrors.
Douglas Sills stole that one.
Talk about Little Shop of Horrors, because currently it is playing off-Broadway, and it is also playing at Pasadena Playhouse, and they're two completely different productions, even in the sense of their what they do. The Pasadena Playhouse one is very inclusive. It's got African-American, what's the character's name? The Ellen Green?
Audrey.
And just amazing. We're going to hear her in just a second. She sounds incredible. It looks really, really great.
Hunter wasn't good.
Yeah, you told us.
Ooh.
This is the death anniversary of August Wilson, who Denzel is promising to do his entire Philadelphia
thing. I was like,
Denzel
loves it all.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Fences, The Piano Lesson, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Two Trains Running, Seven Guitars, etc. And then also the death anniversary of George Grizzard, who was in the original Broadway production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Just to go back to
Virginia Woolf. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And that's where we're going to stop because we're running out of we have run out of time. So let's
made
go.
Me sad.
I know. Let's listen to George Salazar and MJ Rodriguez singing "Suddenly Seymour." It's really, really beautiful.
Let's.
Suddenly Seymour.
We are back. You are listening to us off stage and on the air on KOOP HD1 HD3.
Hornsby.
Suddenly Seymour. That's my Ellen Green imitation. So we were talking while that was playing, is the thing I love about her interpretation is it's so not Ellen Green. She's so not playing that ditzy New York-y kind of character.
Yes.
And it's refreshing. It's refreshing,
should've
refreshing,
told
refreshing.
Carrie that.
And she's a person of color, which is even better.
No, actually, that was I enjoyed that. People are liking the new Off-Broadway one, too.
Yes.
Both of them. Like, they're both just
getting... Yeah, that
was
in the New York Times.
Jonathan Groff apparently is, like, just made to be Seymour.
Yep. I should also say, and we'll talk about this next week a little more in depth, is Jesus Christ Superstar is coming to Austin on October 8th through 13th.
Greatest rock musical of all time.
For more information, you can visit austin.broadway.com. Let's just jump right into our next guests.
Yes. Hi.
Yeah. Hello. We have Coco Electric. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
And Risky Dixie.
Hello.
And the production company is called Mistress of Musicality, and they're here to talk about Burlesque the Vote.
Yes.
Amazing. What is Burlesque the Vote?
So Burlesque the Vote is something that we've been doing off and on in Austin since 2008, and it's really... it's getting everybody together to register to vote. Okay, so
an important thing to do, I should say.
Trying to make everything exciting and fun, and living our best lives on stage and vicariously through our characters. On
so,
stage.
So does the show itself have a political bend to it, or is it really just that we're registering people in the lobby?
Well, you know, I think that every performer comes to the stage with their own solo and their own deal.
Okay.
And so, you know, we have a duet with Lady Liberty tossing around
so you
our
took,
current
like,
president.
Rock the Vote and put it on the burlesque level.
It's pretty much.
Well, there's also, and I didn't realize this, I knew that the, oh my God, I just lost her name, but the Burlesque the Legislature.
Okay, yes.
There's several things that
there are a few things. In fact, Ginger Snaps does do
Ginger Snaps. That's what I was
trying
to remember.
Usually, she will be performing on Thursday and Friday. And she's doing an aerial act, as of course she's very well known for.
She is indeed.
You know, I don't know if you happen to know our 3-time award-winning Austin Chronicle poll winner for Burlesque, her political bend, but I'm pretty sure it is not of the conservative type.
No.
You know, we also have
it's okay.
A couple
off stage
adorable...
and on the air bends left as well.
Well, we often bend left.
We do.
But we also have a couple of adorable USO girls, very World War II era USO adorable singing sensation duet. One of which is here with us, Risky Dixie.
Risky Dixie is a USO girl.
You smiled, so are you part of that?
Well, she also saluted, so that was an important.
I missed the salute.
There was a salute.
I missed the salute. I saw the smile there.
Yeah. So so there's very relaxed, and it's all burlesque. All burlesque all the time.
It's all burlesque all the time. Sometimes they're singing with stripping as well.
I heard Ruth Bader Ginsburg's going to be there.
I heard also that Ruth might make
the notorious an RBG. I love her. What's her handle?
Well, we don't own her. so that's her handle.
Well,
and she's,
which
that
is a good thing.
Hilarious.
Nobody owns RBG.
No, I should say nobody owns RBG.
So what? So how many years have y'all been doing this?
So Audrey Joy Maker, who also created the Texas Burlesque Festival a long time ago, and a whole lot of also awesome political style burlesque shows, started in 2008.
Okay.
I came on board in 2012, and also in 2014, Ginger Snaps and I did a combined Legislate This, Burlesque the Vote. So it's been a few of us over the years. It's not a small endeavor. We have 18 different performers over this weekend, Thursday through Saturday. Different performers every night. Some folks are coming back. Some folks are only doing one night. We have folks coming in from Houston. We have Viva La Vox coming in from Houston and Black Orchid coming in from San Antonio.
So someone could go every night and see a different show.
I'm just thinking
absolutely.
That.
Yeah, well, that sounds like fun. So in the how successful have you been in the past in your in your work to get people registered?
That's what I was wondering.
You know, we're a college town, and so we live in Austin, and so everyone's always moving.
Oh, you know, I just realized there is a college here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and so
more than one.
People think that they're registered to vote appropriately, and they go, "Oh crap, I moved." You know, and so we are pretty successful actually because of just our housing turnover and our students. So even if maybe they already are registered to vote, they're going to update their registration. Yes.
I was like, you can you're able to update and do everything there too, besides registering.
Well, and I have to say, you know, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, but it is so vitally important for people to vote, especially if you are on the proper side of the aisle and want to make some changes in 2020. It's vitally important. And of course, the people that tend to vote in a progressive manner tend to be the people that are the people that would vote in a progressive manner. Many times are not people that vote or are registered. Right. And we make it very difficult here in this state for people to register.
It's true. And we're all a little bit exhausted and fatigued. And so we're trying to make it a little bit easier for everybody to register. And also, the deadline for registering to vote for our next election is a couple of days after the show. So this is kind of your
it's
last chance.
Up.
So we want to, you know, I think
for the
we've
2019
discovered,
elections.
Yes,
for,
I think we've discovered how important it is to vote for our not presidential elections, but also for voting for our legislators and the people who make our laws and represent us. So
there's a
big,
lot
big deal.
There
going
is an
right
argument
that
it is more important to vote locally and statewide than it is to vote federally, because this is the stuff that affects you on a day-to-day basis.
Yes.
So it's really important. I'm thrilled that you're doing the work. So I'm assuming that we're not going to take our really young kiddos to this show.
No, burlesque is for grown-ups.
It is kids only.
You know,
big kids only.
If you have an older teenage, you know, child or something, and you feel like they can handle a little bit of adult humor and you know, some nudity, then go for it.
Yep.
But generally we recommend 18 and up, because some of the stuff, you know, it's stripping for smart people, so you know, some of our jokes are a little bit complicated sometimes, and you know, younger audiences might not get all of the nuances of what we're doing. You know. Yeah.
So what are some of the, you mentioned some of the acts that are coming in, are there any other highlights that you want to talk about?
Oh, goodness, there's so many. And also, Risky's involved a lot of our community as well. So we also have Affordable Housing Austin coming in and doing some stuff.
I'm wondering, are they going to be like all in the lobby where it's voting, or are they going to be part of the show and talking to people also?
Well, they might just be part of the show, but I don't know if I'm at liberty to discuss that.
Might be interesting to come and see.
But we have a little Save Our Seas moment with the with one of the directors of that organization. We also have a couple of superheroes, because I get it. I totally want to be a superhero right now in our country. I believe we might have an appearance from Wonder Woman and maybe Superman.
So when do you actually perform? When does the show happen?
The show is this weekend, so it's Thursday through Saturday.
Okay.
Shows
Thursday
are at 8 o'clock.
Okay. And where can folks go to get more information?
Vortexrep.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for being on the show, and hopefully some or all of you can stick around and join us backstage. We can learn a little bit more about you.
Thank you.
That would be great. So that was Coco Electric and Rixey Dixie of Mistress of Musicality's Burlesque the Vote, October 3rd through 5th at the Vortex. For more information, vortexrep.org. We'll be back. Maybe. Yeah.
I can sing for you, Lisa.
Yeah. Okay, we're just gonna keep going. The music is not happening, but it was gonna get off your sorry blank and vote.
What was it? What was the song?
It was get off your sorry blank and vote. I just said it.
I love it.
We did it another week. We made it again.
It happened, Lisa.
It did. Remember, folks, we're on the Facebooks. We're on the Twitters. We're not on the Instagrams. We don't have an Insta.
Do we not have an Insta?
I don't think we have
an
Insta.
We could fix that. But you know
why? Because, you know, we're so good at all the others.
It would be great. I got locked out of the Twitter. I said if you'd help me, I'd get back on the Twitter. Mm-hmm. But People need to leave us nice comments and reviews and tell me how they want the Insta. And then
do us a review on iTunes podcast, because that's where you can sign up to get it every week. You can also sign up directly on our website.
Absolutely. Best way is offstageonair.com. You just go in the little box on the right, enter your email, and voila, Lisa and I appear in your mailbox weekly.
And you're able to hear backstage at Offstage. And that's the good thing. You can hear all the things that we learn about our lovely guests who we love.
Secret things we just don't talk about
secret
on air.
Things. It's a secret.
Secret.
So if you are listening on the terrestrial radio right at this moment, you can stand by for Austin Modern News. If you're not, if you're on the podcast, stand by for Backstage at Offstage. And so I wanted to play a little bit of, have you seen any of Renee Zellweger's Judy?
Yes.
She's doing a pretty amazing job, I think.
Had a long conversation about that this weekend.
Oh, good or bad? Are we for or against?
I think I'm okay with her in this. I was very against her in Chicago.
Surprise.
She's not a dancer and Roxy's a dancer. Okay. Two different things.
Well.
But so I'm down with her in this.
Everybody take that.
I agree.
Okay. Yeah. Heather agrees. I don't, but okay. Let's listen to Judy, or Renee, /Judy. Getting happy.
Forget your troubles, come on, get happy. You better chase all your cares away. Sing hallelujah, come on, get happy.
All right, the curtain has just come down on Nasty the Musical. The story of four Siamese cats that fall into the mud. And they just get nasty. And they meet up with some Jellicoe cats, and the rest is history. So
it's going to reopen at another venue.
We have
it has to reopen in another venue.
We have finished the show, and we're outside the stage door by the dumpsters, it's actually clean here today. So
it's still hot though.
Yeah, it's still hot. It's
clean
hot.
It is. Hot it is.
Hot. We're breaking records here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, I know.
Sweating it all the time.
Sweating to the oldies. So here joining us backstage is Coco Electric. Hi, hey. Coco. Now, you haven't been backstage because I think...
No, I
Yeah, because last time you were here, we didn't have backstage.
Yeah.
We have Heather Ross.
Hello.
The Incomparable. And Johnny Meyer.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Hey, just like right off the bat, because we can't do it on the terrestrial radio... How much are tickets for your show?
Oh.
You said you wanted to say that, and now you don't even know the answer.
Oh, I meant
I didn't say
get,
I wanted I, to say that.
Oh. We did give it. It's vortexrep.org.
Yeah. Just go get your tickets at vortexrep.org.
Yeah, go get your tickets. We can just tell you exactly what to do. And
they're
also...
10 to 35 generally. Yeah. If you're a veteran, they're 10.
10 to 35.
If you're a student, they're 10.
I do know...
It's a sliding scale.
Yeah, at the Vortex, they got a really good... They're also Blue Star Theater, so discounts for vets.
Yeah.
They have a lot of good discounts. So if you probably qualify for one.
There you go.
We recommend vets come to this show because, it's written by a vet. You know, the director's a vet.
Like, yeah, and my dog goes to see a vet on occasion.
Bring the dog.
There you go.
They Bring do. The dog.
Yeah, she'd be excellent. Heather knows my dog. Don't
so,
you?
Yes, so
she's
cute.
She's adorable.
Sophie is adorable.
One thing that I wasn't able to do before on the terrestrial radio, and we're just going to do the Biden Pains real quick, because I can't really... plug my own theater too much on the radio, but we have 11 nominations for BIDEN Pain Awards.
You do.
Yeah, so that's pretty amazing.
I saw that and I was like,
yeah.
So I'm going to also mention something else that we didn't mention on air. Monday is the last day for the Chronicle Best Of. There are three people up for Best Director. One, which is Miss Lisa Sheps.
Yep.
All right.
Miss Lisa Sheps. So you have till Monday finish your Best Of votes. And the
Rudy
Broadway...
Rudy Ramirez.
Yeah, it's Rudy Ramirez, Lisa Sheps, and Dave Stakely are the three.
I'm in very, very good company.
Yes. They're also right now just opened up the Broadway World Regional Awards, and this is the nomination phase. So right now, it's about nominating all the different categories before the voting starts. That just opened, if you're interested in that, too. But Lisa Sheps, Best Director, that would be Austin Chronicle.
Or Rudy Ramirez. I'd say one of the two of us.
So...
I'm good with either one of us.
So,
yeah, Dave Stakely's okay, but he's no Rudy Ramirez. Okay, just saying.
He also has a huge budget.
He does.
So I was
I was about to say, when you look at these awards, especially when you get into the technical awards and the design awards, you give me a $200,000 lighting budget, and I'm going to light the hell out of the show. Yeah. It's going to be amazing.
But you're also talking about the Chronicle Awards right now, not Broadway World or Be Iden Payne.
Well, actually, we were talking about Be Iden Payne.
No, but you three are nominated. No, you were just talking about those three nominees and expanding from there.
Oh,
those
yeah,
are
but
the
we
Chronicles.
Were talking, we kind of
which
switched.
Which is but totally different yeah. not on let's, that budget let's, theater let's, scale.
Yeah.
All right, are we done? We can be done. We don't have to be done. We can keep going. This is our show. We do what we want to do. No, Nicole thinks I'm mad at her for some reason.
You're very salty with me today.
No, well, you're just very talky today.
You're very salty. Lisa Sheps, you've known me almost 20 years, and when have you ever seen my mouth quiet?
Okay. Can we talk about this at home?
Sheps and Shiro. Shiro and Sheps. So,
Heather Ross.
Yes.
So there's so much about you that is left to be known. Now, I know that you are a playwright.
I am.
And you are a programmer here at KOOP Radio. Are
I'm
you
in
not?
Training.
You're in training.
Yeah.
By the incomparable training team because they're really, really, really good.
Yes. That would be one Lisa Sheps.
Exactly. I am.
She trained me too. She is an awesome trainer.
So tell folks about the show that you're thinking about doing. You're going to do a...
sex ed show.
Yeah, sex ed show.
I'm still figuring out the title. I've played with like sex ed with Heather Ross or like, you know... sex ed time or I don't know, but I'm open to ideas.
How about
ideas.
I've got an idea for you. I'll just throw it out to you. I call it Little Insatiable Sex Addiction. Okay, that's what I think you should call it. But you can just use the acronym if you prefer.
Lisa.
Yeah. I was about to say, just go with what you call it, the Lisa Show.
So I think that's great. Co-op does not have a sex ed show, but so you're a playwright. Are you also a performer?
I am. Okay. I haven't been doing as much performing lately. I've been doing a lot of behind the scenes.
All right, you're stage managing as well, which is what you're doing for...
Yeah, I was stage managed. I'm stage managing right now and also costuming. And during the show, I'll be running the light board and the sound board. And then, and who knows what else.
So what brought you, Heather Ross, into theater? How did that happen?
Ooh. So when I was a little kid, I was born abroad, and we moved.
I could see that just by looking at you. sorry, that was very sexist.
I was wondering if you were going to go there.
And heteronormative. I just went there. Sorry.
It's okay. So I.
Where were you born?
I was born in Scotland, Aberdeen, Scotland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm from Scotland. Not
she's
really,
totally busting her chops again. I was like, okay. She's on fire today.
I figured she likes to do that to me because I'm so gullible, and so she would like when I was at the ground floor theater, she was just constantly doing.
How,
it. I was like,
oh. How old were you when you left Scotland?
I was 2, and then we moved to Thailand, and I was there for like
naturally.
Where in Thailand?
Bangkok.
Oh yeah,
and I was a child model.
I was there for one night.
For one night,
yeah, I had one
and then
night
the whole
in
world crumbled. Yeah,
just sing about
so
it.
Wait, hold on, we buried the lead here. You were a child model in Bangkok,
yeah,
which is the title of my third book. Tell us about that. Oh my god, this is just going to be about
that
Heather. Sorry, you guys.
Interesting.
Who else was a child model? Anybody?
I was not. We need to hear more.
I was
about
a child model, but not in Bangkok. Yes.
Oh, that's pretty.
I was like
I did the New York runways
3 or
as a kid.
4.
Oh wow!
So I was 3 or 4.
What were you modeling? Onesies?
Like clothes and different, like their outfits are like quite different than ours. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting because I'm this like little blonde, like bright platinum blonde kid with like pale skin in a country where I don't, the majority of people don't look like me. And it's purely because of European imperialism that they like, you know, they're like, oh, I am higher, like I'm higher in the reincarnation scale. So that's what they want to look at. So it's messed
up. In Thai culture, you're higher on the reincarnation scale?
Yeah.
Yeah. They bleach their skin. If they're really dark, you're like on the bottom. They have a lot of skin bleaching.
That makes me sad. I'm sad for Thailand.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of like messed up that I was a model there because I like it was not appropriate. But I didn't know. I was a little kid. And they didn't. But I did several magazines. And there was pictures of me like, you know, getting my hair all done.
You must post those.
I will. I'll find. I actually have before.
I'll
send them to you.
You must post those.
And then we went. That kind of got me into really liking being like photographed. So I was always the ham. Like if there was a photo, I'd be posy and things like that. And then I think that just kind of grew. I got really into I did some theater stuff in elementary, and then I did stuff in middle school. Started taking theater classes.
Have you made it to the United States yet in middle school?
I was about to say when did you get back to the U.S.
So I. Thailand, I was there for 2 years. My younger sister was born there. And then we moved to Ecuador for 6 months, experienced an earthquake. And then
what town in Ecuador?
Wow, I can't remember right now.
Because I've been to three. Tegucigalpa. No, that's in Honduras. Cuenca, Ecuador. Oh, my God. What are the other three? Anyway, don't worry about me.
And then
the Cuenca was cute.
And then we went to like Abilene, Texas for 6 months to help out my grandma. And then we moved to Holland.
Everybody here is going, these places, and then Abilene.
Well, and then we moved to Holland, and then my parents split. And, well, really, my mom left my father. But then we moved to Abilene, Texas for 3 years. And when I moved
from
to Abilene.
From Holland.
Yeah. Like, I went to a place to where no one had ever been outside the country. The kids I went to school with. Yeah. Like, didn't know anything. I was like, you know, so I just didn't talk about it because they didn't, they couldn't relate. They didn't, like, you know, and then they, like, we were like, I was like this foreign kid. Like, whenever
so
they said dress up like
one country, but you experienced, I mean,
a lot.
Those are very different cultures and experiences.
And at what point did theater rear its beautiful head in your life?
I would say I really super fell in love when I was in high school and I saw, like, there was a program of Scholars and you would go see all these different shows. And I saw...
In Abilene?
No. Sorry. I moved from Abilene to Austin when I was 8. There's a lot of moving. For me, I've not had like one home that I lived in forever. So I don't really have attachments to homes. Mm-hmm. I have attachments to, like, you know, experiences.
Sure.
And so we moved here when I was 8, and I've stayed in the Central Texas area.
So you went to high school here?
Yeah.
Which high school?
Bowie.
Okay.
It was designed by a person who designs prisons, so it's really ugly.
Oh, no.
There's no AC in the hallways. It's all concrete, so if it's like 100 outside, it's like 110 inside.
Oh, my.
It's awful.
It must be fun right now at school.
No. And so I saw Les Mis, and that is my favorite music of all time.
Did you go see it last week or 2 weeks ago?
I did. I got invited last minute, so I got to go for free, and I was so excited.
Oh, good job.
I got a good seat.
So have you seen it both with the turntable and without the turntable?
Yeah, I cry. Like, oh. I cried so much. I was sitting there, I was just like, God, I love it so much. I love when a show makes me cry. And like, the person that was with me was just like looking at me like, you okay? And I was like, I'm fine.
Johnny's dying to say something.
Yeah, because like when they kill the little kid in that show,
that killed me.
I'm always like, damn you, Trevor Nunn. Like manipulation and like...
And you know it's coming. And
you know
just
it's coming.
Like,
they build it for...
Oh, I keep thinking it's going to change. It's like whenever I West Side Story or Romeo and Juliet, I go, it's going to have a different ending.
For some reason, they'll just change it this time. But that kid, the kid this time was just so darn cute. And I was like...
Never work with animals or children.
What were your parents up to, if it's all right to ask, that you had these travels?
I appreciate that you asked instead of assuming what it was, because people usually assume military, and it was
I assume
not.
The military or corporate.
It was actually oil.
That's corporate.
Yeah. So it depends what you meant.
You're my second oil person that had a childhood like that in 2 days. I spoke to somebody yesterday who had the same upbringing.
I would say...
Maybe it was you.
No, I don't think so.
I was talking about you. I was talking about
somebody. And
in disguise.
Yeah, my dad was he designed rig ships, and high up stuff. He was he got to decide who got hired and all these things. And I don't even fully
know who it was. I'm sorry, I just remembered who it was. It's Brenner of the Austin Chronicle.
Are you talking about Brenner?
Yep, Brenner. So that's cool. Coco, do you have a theater background?
I do.
Well, give us it. And get closer to that. Bring that microphone closer to you.
Just my whole life I've been in theater.
Your whole life. Do you do musicals?
I do. When I have time. Yeah.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Houston.
Texas or the other one?
Houston, Texas.
Okay. Whereabouts in Houston?
I grew up in Northwest Houston. Okay. So I started out my, theatrical career in dance. So I did a lot of... Houston Ballet stuff and studied and found out that my body is not meant for that. It's meant for burlesque, apparently. Yeah.
Nobody is made for ballet.
I was like, nobody's body is made for ballet.
All should be spared that pain.
It
is the most
bodies.
Unnatural thing you can do to your body.
It's pretty insane, but yeah.
Lisa, that felt like that.
That sounds like that hurt.
It felt good.
I did a couple of months of ballet. when I was in, I think, Holland. And it was very much the, we're running around and just throwing our arms up and laying on the ground. It was like this super fun sweet. Stuff for like
little
kids.
Called modern dance.
Yeah, it was pretty much modern dance, except for like you maybe did the foot positions and that was about it.
So did you get as far as point work?
I did. Okay. Yeah, I did. And then I got a butt. And that was it. And
so. In terms of the aesthetics of people's bodies in ballet, that's changing, I think.
It is, definitely. Yeah. And I still dance on point doing burlesque sometimes.
Oh,
so,
there you go.
So, yeah.
Lucky cool. you.
I get to still use. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Now I get to twirl my tassels.
Well, and actually, in sort of a...
Which you're very good at.
So at what point in your life did that theater bug hit you?
Wow, probably day one. Okay. I was adopted, so uh-huh. I was nothing like anybody around me. And so I kind of tried on a lot of different personalities to sort of find myself. And so it went really well with, memorizing lines and watching, a chorus line over and over again and, that sort of thing.
Do you still do theater?
Burlesque
is theater, but you know what I mean. Yeah. I'm using quotes.
Well, here's the thing, and this is partially how I got into burlesque, is mm-hmm. because I have a son, and we all know that theater hours are long.
Yes, they are long,
and there's not a whole lot of money in it. And so
you can't make a living in Austin.
My son is. I have one more year until he's 18, and then I'm going to get back into it. So
oh, good.
Pretty excited.
Oh, good. Oh, wow.
That excellent, was my excellent. First. My first major, I guess it was a music and theater. Double major with a dance minor was at Southwest Texas State.
Yeah.
Wow. I went to Texas State too.
And then I got my real degrees at Texas State too. But
them's maybe fighting words. Are you saying that theater is not a real degree?
No, I'm just saying that you can do theater without a degree.
That's true, you can. Actually, I was just speaking to someone I forgot
was it
who
Brenner
it was.
Again?
It might have been Brenner again. it may not
so
have been.
So forgetful about Brenner.
I have a somebody, degree in English and psychology. Yeah. Those aren't real degrees either.
It's true. But it was somebody going for an advanced degree in theater. And I said, so what are you going to do with your advanced degree? And they said, teach. I said, yeah, because what else? Why you don't need an? You don't really need a degree. You certainly don't need an advanced degree to work in theater.
Right. No. Mm-hmm. But you do have to have one to like if you want to be a professor. If you
sure. True.
I was supposed to say if you do want to go down teaching.
Johnny, do you have a theater degree?
I do not, no.
Well, thank you for playing. Yeah.
I think if even people who don't want to teach, though, sometimes I think they go back to pick up specific skills that would cost, that would be very challenging and time intensive to get on the outside.
I'm gonna push back on that one just a little bit. Just a little bit. I mean, I think, and it's my own personal opinion, I believe that you can get much more skill building and develop your craft much better. Better by doing it rather than sitting in a classroom.
I'm going to say it depends on the institution and the program.
Okay.
Sure.
I mean,
I think it's and you can stumble into really bad situations outside of a university setting too.
I did theater professionally for many decades before going then to a program, and I learned so much that I was already making a living before that doing and still learned so much.
Yeah. Oh, and, I'm not saying you can't learn something.
But I'm just saying like I'm glad I went and did that. I mean, I did have an oh shit moment in life in my 30s when I got sick of theater and I was like, oh my God, this is all I've been doing since I was 6 years old and it's the only thing I have a degree in.
Yeah.
But I figured it out and I'm still glad I have that degree.
Some of us don't have a degree at all.
Well, and I think like I don't know if it was that way when you were there for Texas State, but whatever your degree plan was you were
Southwest Texas State.
Southwest.
You know what? I went to North Texas State University, which is now the University of North Texas, but to me it's always NTSU. It's
I was like you always call
and
it.
And they spend like ridiculous amounts of money like rebranding and it's silly.
I love that it's Texas State now.
It makes more sense.
Easy to make. Sense. Yeah.
Southwest Texas State
$6 million doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money.
I would have been like, give that to the theater.
Yeah. I think I went there for about 11 years and I loved all 11 of them.
Mm. Did you live in San Marcos at the time?
I did.
San Marcos is
now?
A great place.
No, I don't.
It's a great place for school.
So I want to make sure we have some time to talk to Johnny because we don't have your story and we've been talking for almost 20 minutes
I'm going to have to head out though because I got to go to work, but thank you so much
Heather
for having
Ross.
Me.
Thank you, Heather. For being on backstage.
So thank you so much for coming in.
Yes, thank
Being
you.
On.
Yeah. I hope to come be back on again sometime.
Yes, you have to. And good luck with the sex show. I can't wait to hear
more.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Y'all
Johnny. Are all welcome.
Thank you.
You are a vet. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also a theater performer? Were you before, or is this something new for you?
I crashed into it in 2009. So I joined
after your service or during your service.
After, yeah. Okay. So I joined the Army before September 11th, January 2001, and
just before.
Wow, that's timing. Some timing.
Yeah, a few months.
Yeah.
Well, everybody was. I mean, even then, we were thinking more about like, I suppose China and North Korea and things like that. Probably things we should have been thinking about. but anyway, joined and I didn't grow up with a theater background at all. I think I mean, I heard a fair amount of musical tunes.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up a little bit. My dad worked for the Red Cross, and so grew up in different places, Dallas, New Orleans, and then Kansas City.
All logical. That's a logical progression.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't grow up with theater. I didn't see much of it, and I was probably pretty cynical about it, I guess. I liked literature growing up. And when I got out of the Army, I wanted to learn more about writing. And so in order to, and I found a real, I kind of had a big lacuna. I didn't understand anything about verse.
You had a big what?
Lacuna, blind spot.
Okay,
sorry.
Thank you.
where I didn't know anything about verse, and I knew it was a big form that mattered to a lot of people. So I did that Shakespeare Wynedale program.
Oh,
like
cool.
A lot of folks in town
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
And I had a crazy experience there. It was the closest I've ever worked with people outside of the Army.
Sure.
It was a really intense experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been working on this story about that was about Afghanistan, not exactly about my experience, but parallel to it. And that summer, I rewrote it from an essay. But for that class, I rewrote it for those actors that were doing those three Shakespeare plays with me.
Mm-hmm.
And we did it in... we did it at the Blue Theater.
The Blue Theater. It's right across the street from my theater.
Yeah. And that was part of the Fringe then and at the time. And it was a really moving experience to watch these friends of mine try to feel out and what that experience was like for soldiers. And it did okay. It did all right. So that was a good experience. And that's kind of the direction I went from there.
So thus a career was born.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we know you directed the piece that you're talking about now, but have you performed?
Yeah, I would say most of the labor hours are in playwriting. Mm-hmm. Most of, but the money-wise, it's probably split between playwriting and performing, because playwriting performing opportunities are, you can get more of those, I think.
Sure. There's so many. You know,
yeah.
And many, many people are not doing original work because it's.
Right.
I was about to say it's hard to. I think it's harder to get your original piece out.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. And I get, you know, as somebody who runs a theater, we get scripts all the time and they flow in and there's, you know, not a lot I can do about it.
Yeah. We got to a point where my wife and I, where. She is one of those people, actually.
Who's your wife? What's
Karen
her name?
Alvarado. Karen
okay.
Alvarado.
Okay. Shout out to Karen.
Yeah. She's an amazing artist. She was down here in Austin. This is where we met. And she is actually one of those people who went to go get an MFA. So I think that for her, it was a way of getting access to these skills.
Just because I'm right about everything doesn't mean I'm right about everything.
No, yeah. I'm just thinking about her experience.
I hear you. Well,
We wound up doing... Now we kind of develop the stuff ourselves and make it ourselves. Because
cool.
We get to choose the language we use. We don't have to sidestep any issues that other people are uncomfortable with. And we can fight it out that way.
Great. So how do your past... do you still talk to people from the military that you worked with in your units or...
I do.
And what do they think about you taking that life and putting it forward on stage?
Yeah, it confuses them a bit. you know, it feels real, and a lot of them don't see a theater play outside of necessarily unless I kind of, you know, coax them into it.
Right.
But it's, you know, they kind of, it can be an intense experience for them. We tend to perform in the round whenever I can so that you watch the other people's reactions. And that for them is also very tough because they're very exposed when that happens.
Sure.
but in a good way, I think. I think that that's how you.
Well, that's how you heal. Is dealing with that.
Yeah.
Well, we're like totally out of time, so we've got to run.
Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you for being here. Coco, I just have one question for you.
Sure. It's a good question.
Yeah. Okay. If I were to say you can star in any musical you want right now, I'll produce it for you. What would it be?
Oh my goodness! I think the last time someone asked me that, I was an ingenue.
Well, there you go.
You could be an ingenue.
You're still an ingenue in my eyes.
There's the bubble in.
Oh man!
Anything. There's sky's the limit here.
That's a darn good question. You know, I always loved West Side Story.
No.
You know,
Maria or Anita.
You know, at this point in my life, I think I'd rather be Anita.
I would totally rather be Anita.
I was about to say, I would totally rather be Anita.
And, bonus, Anita lives.
Yeah.
Bonus.
That is
another actually, so does Maria in West Side Story.
Well, is it Maria?
But does she?
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you guys for joining
thank
us.
You.
Thank you. We'll see you later.
Por favor, Maria, por favor. Sabes bien qué es lo que quiere, no le importa si te hiere, y desolada te encontrarás.